Welcome to the Free Man's Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Whitmire. Join us as we explore liberty, truth, and current events from a biblical worldview.
So, Joel.
Yeah.
There's this really good joke about the Soviet Union.
Okay.
That Ronald Reagan gave when he was president.
Let me see. Like, Ronald Reagan jokes.
Yeah, Ronald Reagan's great. And he was actually really funny.
Yeah, he was.
Probably gets that from like his acting days, you know. He was a pretty charismatic guy.
Yes. Now, I've heard some of his jokes, like recordings of him delivering them, so I'm going to be judging how you deliver joke, right?
No kidding. my favorite one basically goes like this. So he says that Gorbachev, leader of the Soviet Union, was running late to a meeting at the Kremlin.
Right.
And so he hops like into his town car and he tells the driver, like, you know, step on it. We're going to be late for this meeting. And his driver says, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, note with all due respect, I'm afraid to speed because, you know, all the Soviet police are extremely strict and, you know, they'll pull over anybody. Doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah.
Gorbachev says, well, you know what? Switch with me. I'll drive. They'll never pull me over. Right. Leader of the Soviet Union.
Right. Right.
So Gorbachev hops in the front seat, slams on the gas, it's flying to the Kremlin. Sure enough, goes around a corner, police officer pulls out, pulls the guy over.
Yep.
And he comes up to the window, you know, he's like ready to like give him the what for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he rolls the window down and he goes, Mr. Gorbachev, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was you, sir. You know, he's like freaking out, like thinking his, you know, life's in danger. And he tells him, you know, don't worry about it, we're just trying to get to the Kremlin. He goes, yeah, right on your way, sir. So then the cop goes back to where he was, you know, like had his car parked. Mm-hmm. There's another one of his cop buddies there, and he looks at him and he says, who on earth was that?
Right.
And he looks at him and he says, I don't know, but he must have been important because Gorbachev was his driver. Isn't that great?
That's fantastic.
I love that so much.
I love how
it's so funny.
Dude, like how he came up with stuff like that, you know?
Well, and that's funny because actually some of those jokes, at least what Reagan said, was that it's actually Gorbachev who told him some of those jokes.
Yeah.
So he would like give him his favorite Soviet jokes and then he would tell him. So that's pretty funny stuff.
That's actually fantastic. That's, I read that Reagan was trying to collect jokes from the Soviets. Like these are ones that the Soviets actually tell. So I think that's one. Just fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, I think that is a good way to start today. Mm-hmm. You know, a joke about old tyranny and kind of lighthearted because the rest of this episode might be a little,
it's gonna be the
on
complete
the heavy
opposite
side. Yeah, yeah. Yep. So yeah, what are we talking about today?
So we're talking about tyranny.
Okay.
And why are we talking about it, Joel?
So we're talking about tyranny because it's another one of those things as we constantly are trying to define things correctly on this podcast.
Should just be called the Definitions Podcast.
No, no. But you know, it's important for us to understand truth and for truth to be communicated clearly, we need to define things correctly. And so, we want to define tyranny for people. We want to show, not just like define it in an academic way and get this intellectual knowledge about it, but as we'll get into probably some in this episode, maybe in the next episode, we'll get into it more, what it actually looks like and how it actually functions and those types of things. And yeah, we'll get into some of that, I guess, in the biblical passages in this one.
Cool.
But yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things too. It's like all these things, right? That kind of gets loosely thrown around, whether it be like in our culture, in the media, kind of political discourse, stuff like that.
Yeah. Why talk about it? Turn the news on.
Yeah.
Because it's everywhere today.
Read a newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're right. It is one of those things, and it too has fallen prey to the relativism, because you can have somebody say, "I'm being oppressed by their marriage," and yeah, I'm not saying that there aren't marriages that are messed up.
I don't know, man.
But there are. But you know, somebody who wants to just sleep around, might feel oppressed by marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody who wants to steal from the grocery store might feel oppressed by those laws. You know, mm-hmm. anybody can claim to be oppressed by anything today. Mm-hmm. So why don't we define it for what it really is so we can maybe cut some of that out, you mm-hmm. know?
Exactly. So what are like, what's the kind of general like Google definition?
Yeah. So going to Google, we kind of love Google here. I wouldn't say we love it, yeah. but,
it's helpful.
Yes. It can be helpful. Serves a purpose. Everybody uses it. It serves a purpose. They have a definition if you just Google the word tyranny from Oxford Languages. And I thought it was pretty straightforward, pretty, mm-hmm. pretty decent. They had it as cruel and oppressive government or rule. Okay. Mm-hmm. A nation under cruel and oppressive government, cruel, unreasonable, or arbitrary use of power or control. Pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's right on.
Their example, the tyranny of the 9 to 5. That's when I was like,
the work day.
So was reading through it. I was like, okay, this is solid. And got to that. I was like, mm-hmm. well, you're not cruelly arbitrarily, unreasonably treated in a 9 to 5. You are choosing to work there.
That's just the Gen Z definition yes. of tyranny.
I feel like every Gen Zer who pulls this definition up and sees that goes, yes,
yes, yes, that's me.
I'm oppressed.
This is random, but yeah. Have you heard of this thing? Like I saw this thing the other day talking about time blindness.
Time blindness.
Did you see that?
I don't think so.
It's this thing where you have mostly Gen Zers. Uh-huh. Are saying that they
suffer. We love
suffer.
Gen Zers on this show, by the way.
I'm a Gen Zer, okay? Yeah, okay? So I could talk about my people like that, you know?
Go for it, because I'm a bit older than you, yeah. So go ahead.
But so they, apparently this thing where mostly Gen Zers say that they suffer from this thing called time blindness.
Okay.
And that's why they're not able to be on time for things like work and like school and stuff. And so like there's like literally people, I'm sure it's like a very small amount of people, right? But like certain people who have literally tried to say to like their bosses, like, uh-huh. I can't be on time because I suffer from time blindness.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, man, I wish that was real because I think I suffer from it too.
You are a Gen Zer.
Yeah, I am a Gen Zer.
Maybe there's something to it.
Maybe it's like a generational curse kind of thing, you know?
Well, dude, a generational curse mm-hmm. means that the generations before you had it and we didn't. So no.
All right.
It doesn't fly.
We'll see how it is. Yeah.
all right. So that's Google. Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward. All right. Uses a really weak analogy mm-hmm. to back up its definition. But cruel, unreasonable, arbitrary use of power or control. That's a pretty solid definition of tyranny.
Yeah. Yeah, and it definitely brings up kind of like the government aspect, mm-hmm. right? Like the government overreach of power right. is kind of how we think of tyranny today and stuff like that.
Tyranny can come from individuals to individuals.
Sure.
You know, there can be abusive relationships and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of the podcast, for our episodes today, we're going to be focusing more on government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we normally do.
So yeah, that was Google. We're going to get into the ancient view of tyranny now, and I'm going to let you take the wheel since this is yes. your wheelhouse.
My 5 minutes of fame.
No, come on. you'll at least take 10 here.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so I'm going to milk this for all I can. Please. 35 minutes we're going to spend on this.
Y'all buckle in.
Just wanted to talk about a few things because so... Like a lot of our sort of modern concepts of government and culture mm-hmm. and politics and things like that, we have adapted them from sort of the ancient aspects of Western society.
Or at least their terminology.
Right, or at least their terminology or something like that.
Right.
Ancient Greece, ancient Rome, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Although they're not always like fully accurate. But
right.
So the idea of tyranny is not unique in that respect. We literally derive our English word for tyranny is a derivative of the Greek word tyrannos, which is simply a verb that mm-hmm. all it means is the seizure of authority or the seizure of power.
Okay.
And so it, unlike our modern kind of word of tyranny, which has like a very negative, like we talked about in the Google thing, right? It's like oppressive form of government, like abuse of power, that sort of thing.
Right.
The Greek word tyrannos has a it's not completely neutral, but it's a more neutral term. Like, okay, it just means the seizure of power, yeah, like someone takes power.
So it could be somebody who is elected to power. It's and or somebody who just takes power.
So, yes.
Okay.
Elected is probably a bit of a stretch.
Sure. Especially for the ancient world, yes.
Yeah. So, and like we can kind of get into that because, so the way that I kind of think of it is the consolidation of power through popular support and or held through military force.
Okay.
So oftentimes what we kind of see in the ancient Greek tyrants, mm-hmm, so these sort of, they're these ancient Greek leaders, more specifically, the ones we know the most about are the ancient Athenian tyrants.
Right.
Okay. So in the city state of Athens, which is just one city in the great, you know, greater Greece.
Right.
We have kind of a lot of records of, there was this time period of tyrants, essentially. Mm-hmm. So this was how they led sort of their, or this is how they ran their government before the Athenian democracy, kind of as, okay, we've become more familiar with it, was put into place.
Gotcha.
And so, like you said, with the kind of election aspect, there's sort of either A, these tyrants, these leaders come to power either through sort of like a military coup, just, mm-hmm, sort of like literally overthrowing the tyrant before them, or it can be through popular support. Right. So it's not really election. It's just sort of more of like a mob rule,
like saying,
thing.
Yeah, we
like
want
people
you.
Are just like, yeah, this guy's in power. You other dude, like, get out.
Gotcha.
Or we will bring in the military kind of thing.
Okay.
So like one of the most famous examples of this is there's a guy named Pisistratus who...
That's quite the name.
Yeah, no, right? But so like he was alive... or sorry, ruled from 546 BC to 510 BC. And he, with the help of this guy named Megacles, which is like the coolest name of all time.
That's like the ancient Greek version of a Megatron.
Yeah. Like this is, I'm going to probably like throw this into the name ring of like into the hat for my son's possible names.
Megacles.
Be like Mara. Megacles Clark. It's pretty cool, you know.
Let's hope he was a worthy role model.
Yeah, I mean, not really, but okay. So basically there's this kind of famous story where Megacles helps Pisistratus consolidate power in Athens.
Okay.
And they come up with this ruse where Megacles finds this like super attractive woman, and they put her in a chariot with Pisistratus, and they tell the people that she's Athena, and the goddess of like war and like a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
But so the idea there is that they put Pisistratus with Athena right into Athens and
sure,
say
the gods are
he has
him.
Right the yeah, favor
okay.
of the gods with
Got
him,
it.
And then the people sort of rally behind that and say, yeah, Pisistratus is our new leader.
Okay, did it work?
So he does stay in power for a while, and then his family actually kind of like actually consolidates rule for a really long time in Athens, okay, until a guy named Cleisthenes ends up through another sort of coup with mm-hmm. all these different sort of
tricks,
tricks and political maneuvers.
Nothing
he
new
comes
under
into
the
power.
Sun.
Do what?
So nothing new under the sun.
Nothing new under the sun, exactly. So, but Cleisthenes was a guy in 509 BC, or actually technically 508 BC, establishes what we know as the Athenian democracy as the way to end this system of the tyrants.
Okay.
Because you kind of just have this perpetual, like one guy comes to the power, enacts some laws, someone else takes over through some type of like coup or political mm-hmm. maneuvering.
Right.
And
right.
then so Cleisthenes kind of has this enough is enough moment. And sort of secedes some power to the people and creates this thing that we think of as democracy.
Gotcha. Sort of.
Yeah. So, but some of those important kind of things to notice here about the way guys like Cleisthenes, Pisistratus, there's also a famous tyrant called Solon. Mm-hmm. There's this thing called Solon's Reforms. A lot of people have heard of that, 594 BC.
I've heard of that too.
Yeah. So, like Solon, for example, instituted a bunch of policies that emphasized the trade of olive oil. And
interesting.
A lot of the tyrants were really responsible for things like public works,
right.
Developing like trade, maritime trade, stuff like that. And so the difference, really the key difference between sort of ancient Athenian tyrants and ancient Greek tyrants to what we think of as modern day tyranny is effectively they just ruled as sort of like these popular leaders. Okay. Where it was just sort of like they come to power through whatever means, and then they say to the people, like, what do you want? Mm-hmm. And then the people say, we want a better harbor. And then they make it happen. And or we need more money. And so they're like, all right, we're going to do more olive oil trading and things like that. And so they're kind of like these just very popular opinion-driven leaders where, and that's how they stay in power.
So what was, they just kind of give people what they want. Their incentive then to be in power? Like, who would want that job to be like, what do you want? And then make sure it all happens.
That you actually have to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a good question. There's definitely, I mean, there's sort of like economic benefits to it yourself.
Sure.
So like you
line your pockets maybe.
Yeah. You would probably end up lining your pockets through some of that sweet, sweet olive oil money. and then there's just sort of the aspect of fame. You know, there could be military reasons. So sort of like defense, basically keeping your family alive. You know, if there's another tyrant in power and they didn't really look upon you and your family so favorably, that could put you at risk. And so there's some incentive there. But
makes sense.
The main thing to kind of understand with that is, again, their sort of understanding of tyrannos, at least at first, is while it has that aspect of like consolidation of military and economic power, it's a much more like neutral understanding of the word than what we think about it today.
Okay.
Now that develops over time. There was about a century later, there was a group called the 30 Tyrants in about 404 to 403 BC. Okay. That's 30 oligarchical rulers. That was a puppet government instilled by Sparta after they win the Peloponnesian War in Athens. So when Sparta defeats Athens, they put their own people basically into leadership, like their own sort of puppet government to run Athens.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's what's called by Plato and I believe Aristotle as well. They call that era like the 30 Tyrants.
Okay.
And that's sort of used to like harken back to 100 years before of its like, hey, imagine, remember how we used to have like one tyrant that would rule at a time? Like imagine being ruled by 30 tyrants. How terrible would that be?
Yeah, so it becomes like this byword of we need to not have tyrants. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yep. And so that's where you kind of see like the origins of it, that word like shifting into a much more negative context of like this sort of tyrannical, well, it becomes tyrannical rule by like a few people. Something that needs to be avoided and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the whereabouts of the ancient views of tyranny. There's a lot more to it. You know, it wasn't just in Athens and it didn't just end in 508 BC when the democracy started. There were actually other city states that kept
doing tyranny
for years after that. So, but that's kind of the general ancient, you know, kind of historical view on it.
That's fascinating. I love that kind of stuff as always. And thank you for that, because I think as you were saying, like it started taking on a negative connotation with it. I think that fits well into our next definition. I think the one that we're really going to stick with this episode, I should say this series, it comes from Noah Webster's 1828 Dictionary of the English Language.
Yep.
Go figure we'd use that one again. but he defines tyranny as arbitrary or despotic exercise of power. The exercise of power over subjects and others with a rigor not authorized by law or justice, or not requisite for the purposes of government. Hence, tyranny is often synonymous with cruelty and oppression. And he kind of goes on, you know, cruel government or discipline as the tyranny of a master, unresisted and cruel power, absolute monarchy, cruelly administered, severity, rigor, inclemency. So this whole concept of tyranny from Noah Webster was not good, bro.
Yep.
to put it in modern vernacular.
Yeah.
But No, just the idea here of arbitrary or despotic. So arbitrary is not a word we use a lot of today. You might hear it in legal cases and stuff. Mm-hmm. But arbitrary means rule that is, he says it here, not authorized by law or justice.
Yeah.
Right? It's somebody who comes in and starts exercising power without any kind of sense of justice or any kind of idea of law backing up his actions.
Right. Yeah, there's no actual like written precedent. Right. That's another legal term that's used a lot for like that law or that use of that law.
Correct. And so this is this idea of arbitrary without this use of power without authorization from law or justice, it carries that idea that it's just ruled by the whims of whoever's in power, whoever can manage to get on top, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he also goes on that it's not requisite for the purposes of government, right? So if power is being exercised above and beyond what government exists for, then it's tyranny.
Yeah.
Right? That could be it. This could be beneficial things, as we'll get into. Like sometimes tyrants get power by giving people, like the Athenians, what they want.
Yep.
But then having a chokehold on everything else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to just kind of say. It was like, you can see how this word ends up being used, you know, that kind of ancient idea gets adapted into like our modern time, because like, exactly like you said, it's like, it's not always that there can't be some kind of seemingly positive effect, but it's outside of the confines of what government's actually supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And so when you look at that, and as we'll get into it, these so-called benefits, or as the Romans used to call it, the bread and circuses, you know, that's usually these types of promises are how they get to power again, you know? So just to recap that, tyranny is arbitrary or despotic exercise of power. The exercise of power over subjects or others with a rigor not authorized by law or justice or not requisite for the purposes of government. Hence, tyranny is often synonymous with cruelty and oppression. And we'll get into oppression later, which oppression, it's always cruel, you know?
Exactly. So
that leads us with a nice understanding of where tyranny came from, what our modern idea is. The 9-to-5 isn't really tyranny, guys. Yeah. but this other idea, and this coming from the 1828 dictionaries, what our founders, the founders of America, would have understood tyranny. This is what they were fighting for. But all that brings us to, what does the Bible have to say about it? You know, because we're talking about truth here. Let's go to the ultimate source of truth. Let's discuss what God's word says about it. And so our first examples that we're going to see, I'll let you take the wheel here, are from Exodus 6 and Exodus chapter 7. And if you're familiar with the Bible, those of you listening, you'll know that this is getting into Moses and Pharaoh.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of these verses are really going to touch on, just examples of tyrants in the Bible and their sort of abuse of power. So the first story is from Exodus chapter 6 and 7, the first bit starting in verse 1. And so I'll just start there.
Okay.
It says, "But the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land.' And verse 2, 'God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners.' Verse 5, 'Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from the slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment.' So in that passage, you kind of see the tyranny that the Israelites were under by Pharaoh and the Egyptians' rule in their slavery.
Right. Where God says in verse 5, "Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves." So, yeah, their tyranny was that they were slave labor, right? And God being gracious, he hears their groaning. Like, groaning doesn't happen because tyranny's nice.
Yeah.
Or that their slavery is some kind of easygoing. They're groaning as slave labor for the Egyptians, and God is mercifully stepping in, remembering his covenant to come deliver his people.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's just so, so good.
Yes, God is good.
But you want me to go ahead and keep reading to the next part?
Yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
All right, so again, jumping ahead, Exodus chapter 7, starting in verse 14, we have here, it says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he's going out to the water. Stand on the bank of the Nile to meet him and take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent." So he's referencing before this and into chapter 6, early chapter 7, the first time that Moses confronts Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. But he says, "And you shall say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you, saying, let my people go that they may serve me in the wilderness. But so far you have not obeyed." In verse 17, "Thus says the Lord, but this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn to blood." And then continuing on.
Verse 23,
yep. "Pharaoh turned and went into his house, and he did not take even this, the Nile turning into blood, to heart."
Yeah.
Man, so, what a jerk.
No, really.
Yeah.
No, but you see in both of these, you see how there's tyranny from the Egyptians and specifically Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. And God has come, he said he would deliver, he comes to deliver and commands, "Let my people go that they may serve me in the wilderness." But I love that. "But so far you have not obeyed me." That's what God says to Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. Like, even Pharaoh is supposed to bend the knee to God.
Yeah.
Even the tyrant is supposed to. And that's where the rub is coming from, because tyrants are seeing themselves as either outside of having to obey or maybe see themselves as gods. Yeah. Like, I know the Egyptians saw Pharaoh, their pharaohs, as some kind of god.
Yeah, in the old kingdom, which I believe this was still technically in that. So
Yeah. And so you just have this here where God is showing himself to be in total in charge. And yet, you know, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He's hardened that he's not going to let the people go. He's going to keep using them as slave labor, and God's not going to have any of it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I think in that, those passages, you do see like that kind of key element of tyranny, which is like this refusal to adhere to either a reason from God, but
yeah,
also like any type of authority outside of yourself, right? Like, that's a key component, I think, to tyranny. And you see that in there,
you know,
it's like literally God's telling you, stop it. And he's like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I will.
Well, and it's arbitrary, right? Mm-hmm. Pharaoh's not, and he didn't enslave the people with some kind of backing from any kind of law, maybe their own laws, but those laws weren't based in ultimate truth from God or from the creation mandate in any way, you know? These are just arbitrary. They're by his own whims. And so God's stepping in to correct it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a warning to tyrants. Beware, God won't let you rule forever. Mm-hmm.
So what are, like, going throughout the, you know, the Bible, what are some like kind of later examples as we
You know, some of the things that we looked at is, and we'll touch on this again, is like, you know, tyrants, God can allow them as punishments and corrections. And sometimes he doesn't. The Israelites weren't being punished by God in the tyrant of Pharaoh, but that he was raised up that God would show his power to deliver his people, right? And so the tyrant, another situation where it is a correction can be seen in Judges 3, 12 through 15.
Okay.
Well, you can just read the whole book of Judges and you'll see many examples of tyrants as corrections and judgments on people who have turned away from God.
Yeah.
Right? So this starts in verse 12 where it says, "And the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord strengthened Eglon," if I'm saying that right, the king of Moab against Israel because they had done what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So God is allowing Eglon, king of Moab, to come against his people because they've turned away from him, done evil. So verse 13, the Eglon, gathered to himself the Ammonites and the Amalekites and went and defeated Israel, and they took possession of the city of Palms. And the people of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years.
Dang.
Then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and the Lord raised up for them a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, a left-handed man. The people of Israel sent tribute to him, by him to Eglon, the king of Moab.
Nice.
Right? So we see here that God allowed the Israelites because they turned away from him and did evil. God is allowing these tyrants, Eglon, to come in, defeat them militarily, then take possession, like occupy their territory. And then they have to pay tribute. Mm-hmm. But when they cried out, God, who is always merciful. Mm-hmm.
To his people, for sure.
Yeah. He delivers them by raising up Ehud. And it's kind of amazing. Ehud, a left-handed man, which I love that it just has to stress that.
I know, it's like so random. And it's like, this dude was left-handed. Right. Okay. Like him of all people.
Right. Well, as you will see, if you keep reading that passage, it's interesting because he hides a knife he makes on his right thigh.
Okay.
Which might signify that, you know, if they were checking for weapons, they would have checked his other side because, you know, right-handed, but they wouldn't have checked that side. So he hid it. And
interesting.
So he goes into the king, gives the tribute. As he's leaving, he's like, I have a message from you from the Lord. And the king sends everybody else out.
Is the message a knife to the face?
Not to the face, but Eglon was a fat man. And the Bible kind of takes pains to make sure you know he's a fat man. Uh-huh. And Eglon stabs him when everybody else is gone. But he stabs him, like, in the king's bathroom.
Nice.
And the guy was so fat, like, the fat, like, covered the blade after... And he just left it. Now, this is kind of gross. It's just gross. It's like fat. Ugh.
This is just the proof of like that the Bible is super weird sometimes.
Well, it's not just super weird. It's just not going to pull any punches. It's like, this is what happened.
Right.
Right. And so, it's just the guy, Ehud locks the doors and gets away, and all the servants, they leave the king in there for hours. So Ehud gets away because they think the king's like relieving himself.
Nice.
And they get embarrassed. They finally go in, find out he's dead. But then by then, Ehud's like rallied the troops of Israel and they throw off their oppressors.
Nice.
So just a like unique, like what is happening kind of story. But God will deliver his people through what is happening means, you know?
Nice.
I mean, the Nile River went to blood. And I mean, what is happening?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's a story, another account where we see tyranny happening, but God delivering. And then 2 Kings 11:1-3, this is a very unique story in the Bible. So there's just some background. I believe the king of Judah, his name was Ahaziah. I don't know if that's how you say it, but he had died, I think, in battle, and his mom, Athaliah, I think is how you say her name.
Cool.
She came to power, and then this is how she comes to power. Now, when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the royal family.
Oh, nice.
Right?
It's like a Romanov situation, you know, like the Russian royal family. But continue on.
Yeah, you're right. But it goes on in verse 2, but Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and she put him and his nurse in a bedroom. Thus they hid him from Athaliah so that he was not put to death, and he remained with her 6 years hidden in the house of the Lord while Athaliah reigned over the land. All right, so wanted to talk about this one because, like you acknowledged, she sees that the king's dead, and she goes in and she starts killing all the heirs.
Killing spree, yeah.
Right? And then the daughter of one of the former kings hides Joash, and they hide him in the temple for 6 years until he gets, you know, old enough. But then what's cool is a coup takes place. And this is one time that an overthrowing of government is, like, looked upon in a good light. It's justifiable because they're getting rid of this tyrant, this evil woman who turned the nation away from God. And she was very wicked. They get rid of her to restore good government. And they reestablish the covenant with the Lord, and the king makes a covenant, not just with God, but with the people. Like, and they have this, you could almost say, some kind of constitution there, right? I'll rule this way if you'll do this kind of thing.
Well, and then, I mean, obviously, like, you know, it's the son, Joash, is
the rightful heir.
Right. So it's like, it's a coup, but it's not really, it's more of a restoration of right order.
A reformation?
Restoration.
No, you're absolutely right. But, it's a restoring of right, good government the way it was supposed to be.
And so it's like, you know, because you have obviously from
security,
that lock just went off, and that honestly scared me too bad. I thought I was about to have to throw down with somebody. It's like, somebody come in here. But anyways, back to what's her name?
Athaliah.
I don't know how to say it. I have a feeling
we're
going to
get a lot of weird comments like, man, you guys cannot.
I can do the Greek ones, but not the Hebrew ones.
I completely stand by the fact that I can't pronounce these correctly.
Yeah. I like how you do it with confidence. Like, you're just kind of like, I don't know, and I'm okay with that. And I think that's a good mentality.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm trying here, guys. Yeah. Give me some grace.
But so Athaliah, you know, we kind of see this aspect again of like, typical procedures of a tyrant is the consolidation of rule, which we'll get into that. Like, how do they, you know, do that? Hers specifically is not through military power, but it's through violence, right? It's like, I mean, murder, like this whole line of people. So I'm the rightful heir and I can consolidate the bloodline into my own family. Which, and then by the grace of God, they're able to, you know, preserve the rightful heir. But,
which is amazing because through that bloodline, we have Jesus.
Bingo.
Pretty pretty close cutoff there. I mean, God had has means, but God ensured that that bloodline, because he made a promise to David, would continue till Jesus. So pretty cool.
Yeah, that's aspect awesome. Of that. That's super cool.
Yeah.
But so continuing on into the violent tyrants of the Bible. One of kind of the one of the worst ones in terms of how he's painted, jumping to the New Testament, is King Herod. So obviously we have Matthew chapter 2, verse 16 here. You know, we have kind of the birth story of Jesus in Matthew. And it talks about the Magi who came, and they end up, you know, meeting Herod, and they are basically telling about this prophecy of, you know, the coming king. And they want to see him. And then Herod kind of does this whole like, yeah, go see him and like tell me, you know, come back to me and tell me what you see, because I'd love to meet this guy
and worship him.
Yeah, and totally worship him.
Man. Yeah. It's just a creep.
Yeah. But so in Matthew chapter 2, you have verse 16. It says, then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked, so this is after the fact, by the wise men or the Magi, he became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years old and under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. And so you kind of, again, you have just this example of this, you know, tyrant who is in power. He's technically the, you know, king of
Judea.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. I was like, let me make sure I get that right.
Yeah.
And exercising his power in this way of he's trying to protect his rule. Ultimately is what he's doing, you know, in his eye, he thinks, sees Jesus or this coming Messiah as a threat. So he must eliminate that threat.
Well, he is a threat to tyrants.
Yes, he is.
And it's amazing because, we weren't going to get into this, but Jesus's kingdom, you know, is a spiritual kingdom, right? It's in the hearts and minds of people. He told, Pontius Pilate, if my kingdom were of this earth, my followers would fight for me, right? But that's not how he wants his kingdom put forward. He wants his kingdom put forward by means of the proclamation of the gospel and the Holy Spirit turning the hearts of people and regenerating them.
I think there's like that verse in Jeremiah where he says, I'll write my laws on their hearts.
Yeah, that's him, the new covenant that Jesus was ushering in.
Yep.
And so you have that. Now, as that happens in the hearts and minds of people in earthly kingdoms, those earthly kingdoms start changing. Mm-hmm. And that is what would have ended up being a threat to Herod, though he wouldn't have even noticed that. And he didn't even see that. He saw Jesus as just another king, another rival, because that's what he was proclaimed as. And so he went after him.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, this is the idea of that consolidation of power, and it's arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Like, to think about it, he murdered all those babies.
Yeah.
And it's arbitrary. It's not based on anything that can remotely be called just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then in that, we'll get into this kind of in the next episode, but again, you have like there just this clear example of oppression.
Right.
Right. You have this guy who has too much unchecked power.
Right.
Too much authority that he has the right to literally just take the lives of completely innocent people's children.
Right. And if you, and it's, if I'm not mistaken, a few verses before that, when the wise men first show up and they ask, where's the Messiah? Mm-hmm. It says that, I think it says Herod was disturbed, but then all Jerusalem was disturbed.
Mm, that's right. Yeah, they're disturbed by the presence of the Magi.
Well, I think what it's referring to is once Herod is disturbed, the people are like, oh no.
Oh, yeah.
Like the tyrant's about to come loot on, like hide. Like,
this is not good.
What if what he's throwing because of his anger gets hits me? You know, that's kind of silly. But yeah, everybody gets disturbed. No, I mean,
that just kind of demonstrates like the reputation that he has.
Right. And
right. Think like about, people start quaking in their boots when he gets mad, you know,
an unchecked arbitrary power leaves people in a place of fear and dread. They have no idea what's coming or what to expect. Mm-hmm. We see that throughout history. KJB, you have no idea if your neighbor or yourself's just going to be picked up one day for something you accidentally said.
You just have to worry about being good communist.
Yes.
Duh.
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 She's gonna kill us.
Yeah. But no, that's really true. And I mean this is completely just kind of like a random aspect about that passage, but one of the things that's become like that whole bit of the Magi and Herod has just become something that's really like caught my attention the last few years, because like we think when it talks about Magi that there are these basically ambassadors from the region of Persia.
Right.
So they're non-Hebrew people from like a foreign land,
right,
even a non-Western land, and they got it. Yeah. You know what I mean? They were like, we're coming to see the one true king.
Right.
You know, and you know, Herod,
an interesting thought, like this is kind of going way outside our scope of talking about tyranny, but you brought it up. An interesting thought, don't know if it's true, but interesting thought is that those Magi were descendants of astrologers that were trained by the prophet Daniel when he was in Babylon.
That's right.
Because Daniel understood that Messiah was coming, and they would have possibly been those who were keeping a watch, like, hey, pay attention, because he'll come eventually, you know?
Yeah.
So that's I think that's one of my favorite theories of where they're coming from. But
yeah,
we don't know definitively.
Right. Yeah, no, we really don't know that much about them at all. It's mostly speculation. But
so back to tyranny.
We'll have to do an episode on just the Magi one day.
That'd be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
It's fascinating. So yeah, you had here a note from Josephus. He had some history on Herod, I think.
Yeah, and then not to go too much kind of into this rabbit hole, but you know, maybe for the more skeptical listeners that could listen to this podcast, you know, it's like all these examples of these people from the Bible, you know, someone may make the argument like, oh, well, we only know that these people were so bad because the Bible says they are, but how do we really know that?
Yeah.
And you actually have in Josephus writes this thing called Antiquities of the Jews. In book 15 of that, he details, yeah, I know, right? I've never written one book. You've written one, but so you're ahead of me.
Tell people about that yet.
But he gives a history of how King Herod came into power. And surprise, surprise, it's through military violence.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of another way, like this, not that the Bible needs to be legitimized, but like there are also sources that legitimize the Bible.
Right.
And kind of, it provides like a very similar depiction of Herod.
Well, go figure that you get confirmation from historians that what the Bible is actually saying is true. Yeah. But yeah, this whole idea of Herod coming to power through violence, I think he killed, was it his, he killed a relative, I think, to gain power, didn't he?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure on that because I'd have to reread it before I could confirm that. Antiquities of the Jews, books 15, in case a listener wants to go and read it for themselves. Yeah, yeah. It's really good. And Josephus is just really cool because he also mentions Jesus at some point.
Yeah.
He didn't meet Jesus, but he says, like, they're talking about this guy, Jesus, for some reason. So it's pretty cool.
So, yeah. And that brings us just to the last tyrant that we're going to look at from the Bible. I mean, we could get into Nero and all that because they're mentioned in the Bible and some of the emperors are. But last one we're going to talk about is Herod II, the son of the Herod who killed the babies.
Yep.
Herod II is the one who's responsible for cutting off John the Baptist's head.
Nice.
And for being complicit. Got that word right that time.
Nice. Yeah. Nailed it.
Man, I'm just nailing it on this podcast. But he was complicit in the false accusations and false judgment of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, because Pilate appeals to Herod, right? And then he's just like, you deal with
it. Well, Pilate sends him off. It's like, oh, you're under his jurisdiction? Mm-hmm. Sends him off, and then Herod sends him back, and then they become friends somehow through that. but yeah, they're both complicit in the death of Jesus Christ, right? So I don't know how you could become more tyrannical than to, in an unjust way, condemn a just man who is also fully God to die.
Yeah.
Right? So it's obviously part of God's plan for our salvation, so praise God for it, but it is still tyranny. And it's still acknowledged as their agency to do these evil things against Jesus, though it was part of God's plan and it has infinitely benefited us, their actions is still evil and they're still held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I know this has been a bit of a heavy topic and our next episode's going to
get it worse.
Get into it.
It gets worse, guys. Just hold on.
Well, worse is a relative term. Mm-hmm. No. But just to recap, just some of the things we looked at, you know, we looked at how people are defining it from Google. We looked at the ancient world with the Athenians and the Spartans, and I appreciated you doing that.
Thanks, man.
I love it when you get into that old history.
It's fun.
Yeah. And then just to reiterate Noah Webster's definition, because I think that's just a good summary of everything we looked at, that tyranny is arbitrary or despotic exercise of power. The exercise of power over subjects and others with a rigor not authorized by law or justice, or not requisite for the purposes of government.
Yeah.
Hence, tyranny is often synonymous with cruelty and oppression. So, yeah. And then, of course, we looked at what the Bible had to say and how tyranny, though God allows it and is means for correcting and judging, he never says tyranny is a good thing, and he is always in the business of delivering people once the correction has been made and they turn back to him.
Sure.
Right. So then in the next episode, we're going to look at tyranny and how it happens and then how it is happening in our world today. And then we're going to look at some of the effects that it has on people.
Nice.
So stay tuned for part two of our little series
so
on tyranny.
Looking forward to
it. Come on. Let's not.
I am actually looking forward to it. It'll be good.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you later. God bless. Thank you for listening to the Free Man's Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe for more great episodes coming your way soon. For more information and to sign up for exclusive bonus content, you can visit our website, thefreemanspodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and God bless y'all.